A Common Path, Florida's People, Culture, and In-Migration, Part 2, Modern Times.
Florida was very underpopulated in the 1920s and really needed people. Now, there was certainly some arguments about who it was that Florida needed.
Political scientist Lynn Leverty.
But you didn't get the arguments you have today about the other type of immigration, which is people coming from Cincinnati and Indianapolis, or 1,000 people from the United States who come into Florida every day. That was welcomed. Now we consider it an issue.
And if you don't like donkeys humming, if you don't like banjo strumming, if you don't like brown-eyed beautiful girls, stay out of the town. And you can walk.
You had this kind of a robber baron culture develop here in the 1920s around the real estate business.
Sociologist Max Castro.
And making a killing quick and selling land that often didn't have a lot of dry areas, selling land by the gallon and so forth.
Now, whether you like it or not, I'm going to tell you about Florida real estate. It's the first time it's ever been mentioned out here today.
I'm sorry, but I'm not.
Do you know that property values have increased 1929 since 1,000%? Do you know that this is the biggest development since Sophie Tucker?
Groucho Marx and Margaret DeMont in the Coconuts.
The beach is a black spot of Florida.
You told me about this yesterday.
I know, but I left out a comma. Look. In a little while, we're going to hold an auction sale at Coconut Manor. The vibe terrible. Beautiful. Here it is, Coconut Manor. 42 hours from Times Square by railroad. 1,600 miles as the crow flies. 1,800 as the horse flies. Coconut Manor, glorifying the American sewer and the Florida sucker. Why, it's the most exclusive residential district in Florida. Nobody lives there. And the climate. Ask me about the climate, I dare you.
Very well.
I'm glad you brought it up. How about it with Coconut Beach? No snow, no ice, and no business.
Miami is the miracle city of the 20s.
Historian Ray Arsenault.
The two great boom cities were St. Petersburg and Miami, but Miami was clearly the preeminent city of the boom.
All you people on the southbound train, oh, won't you listen to my friendly advice? About a quarter after...
Miami was really a backwater because, you know, there was not that much dry land here.
Sociologist Max Castro.
And the railroad really was the creator of Miami. When, according to the famous anecdote, Julia Tuttle sent Henry Flagler some orange blossoms and convinced him that this city would bloom because it, you know, the winter didn't get here. And you had people come here to build a railroad and to build a town. A lot of black people, they were very important in the incorporation of the city. They were kind of brought in to sign and then quickly ignored for the rest of 50, 60 years.
Nobody knows who can that God do.
Then you had this mess where real estate was being sold right, left, and center because it was going to bring in a lot of money.
The kind of get-rich-quick sand merchant mentality, people building new subdivisions, coming up with new styles of architecture, the whole dredge-and-fill mentality.
But Miami wasn't swamp. You know, Miami was a desirable place to spend the winter in.
No ice and no business. Do you know that Florida is the greatest state in the Union?
Is it?
Take its climate. No, we took that. Take its fruit. Take the alligator pears. Take all the alligator pears and keep them. See if I care. Florida feeds the nation, but nobody feeds me, and that's what I want to talk to you about.
If I were to buy, I should prefer some place like Palm Beach.
Miami Beach, Florida, Saturday, August 29, 1925. We left Atlanta...
From the Heart of a Wife, The Diary of a Southern Jewish Woman, 1909 to 1946, published by Scholarly Resources Press, read by Anita Romeo.
The situation is acute. People moving here by the thousands and no place to live. We can get a one-room kitchenette apartment for $150 a month, but how can we live in one room? It reminds me of the gold rush to the Klondike. Plenty of money, but no comforts. People are living without telephones, without hot water, without servants. It's like a madhouse. Dangerous to get across the street. Dangerous to drive a car, almost impossible to get a bite to eat without standing in a line. Men rush madly about with a lust for money in their eyes. Someone seems to be snooping around, trying to listen in, and I'm so tired of learning real estate, I could scream.
Jews, as well as others, Bahamians who built the city.
I'm sure you are expecting something will be said by me about the sweet land of liberty. Now we can tell all the folks in Trinidad that all life in America was the best we had.
You can't really think of Coconut Grove without that Bahamian presence, which is celebrated at the Goombay Festival and all that kind of thing. Same thing in Key West.
Greeks, Anglos were going to Miami to shake the snow off their boots. I mean, it was a good place to go to.
Historian Lazarus Larry Ojack.
I think the Anglos were still the majority.
And you also had a few Cubans here. But Miami was not a Cuban town in the way that Key West was at the turn of the century, or the way that Ybor City outside Tampa was.
In the 1920s, Latin American immigration simply wasn't a major issue at the national level. It really only affected Florida, California, and Texas. There were no quotas, there was no mention, it wasn't an issue.
The sheer number of people flowing into the state was overwhelming. Cities doubled and tripled, even quadrupled in size in 10 years.
Miami, shine on my love and me, so we can stroll beside the roll of the rolling sea.
And this whole bubble burst even before 1929, before the other big bubble burst, in fact.
The Great Depression came to Florida 3 years early when most of the boom collapsed.
Historian Ray Arsenault.
Part of it was due to the Great Miami Hurricane of 1926. The Okeechobee storm of 1928, and the Keys storm of 1935.
The Florida Storm, sung at the Southeast Alabama and Florida Union Sacred Harp Singing Convention.
Part of it was just to a bad pyramid of paper. The system just collapsed of its own weight. So by the 30s, Miami was a pretty sleepy southern city.
Something like 90% of all Key Westers were on welfare or relief, as it was called.
Stetson Kennedy.
And of course, to be certified as being eligible for relief, you had to be a citizen. And there was this woman, she may have been an in-law of mine, and someone who didn't know her said, you're not an American, you're Cuban, aren't you? And the woman replied, said, heck yeah, I'm an American. Said, ain't I on relief?
Florida only reached a population of 1 million in the 1930 census.
My last name is Ho, which is a Chinese name. I'm from the Caribbean because my grandfather was part of basically a labor movement.
In the late 1930s, they were smuggling Chinese and Rome into Florida.
Zora Neale Hurston sings Bellamina, a song about a smuggling boat in the Caribbean.
One of my informants, with intimate personal first-hand knowledge of the subject, told of boatloads of Chinese being put out on the Florida Keys.
After the abolition of slavery, there were various labor experiments on the sugar plantations with various populations, Portuguese, Chinese, people from India.
Lucy Ho is now a professor of anthropology at the University of South Florida.
Many refused to stay on the plantations because the conditions were very little removed from slavery.
And they would be wandering along the overseas highway, and when they saw an automobile, they would flag it down and ask which way to New York City. The Coast Guard and other fishermen were constantly finding Chinese clinging to buoys between Florida and Havana. My informant told me they would collect the money, and of course, he never did it, but others, as soon as they got offshore, they just throw the Chinese overboard and go on back to Havana with the money, or to Key West in this case.
Some of the foreign-born workers came as a part of sponsored federal government programs. For example, the H-2 program brought Jamaican and Bahamian sugar cutters.
Harry Belafonte sings Bellamina.
Brothers we were and brothers we'll be. I till the soil and you sow.
The argument, of course, then was that there simply weren't enough native-born cane cutters. In truth, actually, there were probably quite a few people who might have been willing to do it, but the growers knew that they could have more control over these offshore workers. But Miami was no boomtown. It's only after World War II that it begins to get a bit of its spirit back with air travel, the air conditioning revolution, interstate highways.
You got it, Brer Rabbit? You might as well come on out because we're going to stay here too. They don't know that this is an American motor car with all-season air conditioning.
Yes, all-season air conditioning. Now you can say goodbye to sweltering hot cars.
The uniform nature of cracker culture began to be broken down when massive numbers of northern immigrants began coming to Florida.
Cracker historian Mike Denham.
See them bumper to bumper on the highway.
Don Groom sings Winnebago.
Bureaucracy in Tallahassee just loves them Winnebagos.
The Yankees pose perhaps the largest threat, regardless of their ethnic background.
Is some man from Michigan.
Of course, the big change is that beginning in the early 1950s, they no longer came just for a two-week visit or even for the winter. They were becoming year-round residents.
Whether there was ever any signs on Miami Beach that said no dogs or Jews allowed, there's a debate whether that's an apocryphal story or it really happened.
As I wandered out on the streets of Miami.
The Jewish migration followed the pattern of chain migration, meaning that people who knew each other in New York or Brooklyn, Queens, moved to sections of North Miami Beach and sort of recreated their communities. And so it became almost synonymous with a general social change, the condominium culture.
Now I can never go back to Miami. And New York is so cold that a person could die.
There was also, of course, an age-specific quality to this when Florida became habitable for people who wanted to enjoy their later years.
Can you say something, please?
I hardly think so, and there's something else I want to bring to your mind. Where will you be when you're 65? That's only about 3 months from now.
It wasn't entirely a retirement migration.
Valerie Caracappa sings about developments in Central Florida.
Ever since that rapid at Orlando.
There's been an enormous migration of French Canadians. That's one of the reasons why we have such a successful hockey franchise in the Tampa Bay area. In the early 20th century, they were Anglo-Canadians, but they were very prominent, particularly in Pinellas County, St. Petersburg, which had 96,000 people in its city limits in 1950, nearly doubled by 1960.
Why? Because we like your money, M-O-U-S-A.
But Miami was still a pretty sleepy place until the Golden Exile Cuban migration that comes after the Castro Revolution. Temporary exiles, initially, mostly middle class.
Florida's government was forced to begin to look at immigration.
Political scientist Lynn Leverty.
With the influx of Cubans who came to flee Castro.
And only slowly do they come to realize that they're probably going to be there for some time and begin to sort of invest themselves in the community.
Now, of course, at that time, there was no realization that that immigration flow would continue for so long.
Cuando salí de Cuba,
there was a great deal of compassion for them, I think, within the Anglo kind of traditional Miamians. Although I think as Miami became the kind of unofficial capital of Latin America, there was a recognition that not only was there a new Hispanic Cuban subculture in Miami, but Miami was becoming a Latin city in its politics and its cuisine.
In 1965, the federal government finally instituted ceilings and quotas on the Western Hemisphere, which turned out to be rather draconian since we had almost encouraged it with the agricultural workers programs and all those kinds of things. People ended up waiting 8 and 10 years to get in.
In its nightlife, in its educational system, so that now when people look at Miami, they see a pace of life and a multiculturalism that rivals that of Manhattan or Chicago. So beginning in the 1970s, at least, you have a great deal of tension.
Very liberal social programs that encouraged this kind of immigration.
Well, Jimmy Carter.
Jimmy was responsible for that.
Jimmy Carter was the one that started the whole thing, wasn't he, with Cuba?
Basically.
He was a good man, I think. But he felt that these people needed to come here, and so he... We got a lot of criminals.
This is United States Coast Guard, Key West Border Group. A Cuban raft with 19 persons on board.
The Marielitos, I think, are an exceptional situation.
It's a dangerous sinking. All vessels are requested to keep...
And if it weren't for the fact that amongst them were a few people whom Fidel Castro let out of asylums and jails, they certainly would have been accepted just as the Cubans were in 1960 and 1961.
When the Cubans came in the United States, they released them in the same day.
Julian Aristotte is a professor of languages and social sciences and also an electrician.
When the Asian refugees come, they have to pass more than 12 or 14 months in Chrome. For this reason, we did a hunger strike.
And I took a survey in Haiti 3 or 4 years ago. How many people would come to the United States if they were legally allowed? They stopped the survey after 3 days because they could not find a single Haitian that would not come to the United States.
We're taking in so many people so fast that they are forming colonies within our borders, such as Miami.
The food that you eat is the food that those people work.
Protesters outside an immigration reform luncheon in Orlando.
It's easy when you come from Italy and you don't have paper and you have someone to help you. But what about the people from Mexico, the people from Haiti, the people from Dominican Republic? If we don't work, you won't move.
Anamacio del Norte sings Pakistan Mio. I'm familiar with all the borders, all the way to Tijuana.
We want to halt immigration for 5 years. We want to stop it.
Rick Altman, who helped organize California's Proposition 187 anti-immigration initiative.
During that five-year period of time, we need to have a great national debate as to what our immigration
policy is. I do think it is probably time to have a good public debate on the issue.
We're united, the people.